But what I would like to do today is to try and give you a few clues for you to think about yourself and find some of your own solutions of how you can face stressful times. And certainly, walking with God is one of the basic things. I remember the night that Mary's stepmother died here about a month ago today, and I was sitting there with her dad, who was a godly man, and he was reading the scriptures. This just within an hour or two after she'd gone to be with the Lord, and he said, "We do not sorrow as those who have no hope." And he said it, you know, with the reality of the presence of Christ. A day later, we were driving somewhere, and I commented to him, and I said, "Well, Carl, you know, isn't it interesting that the day before Lois went to be with the Lord, that we had gone to the bank, I'd taken him to the bank, we'd signed all the papers relating to the sale of their double wide, and they were preparing to move to Minnesota, which is their home." I said, "Isn't it interesting the way God worked out all that timing, just legally, to have all that done?" And his comment was very simple. He says, "God's schedule is perfect." And it's something. When you have walked with God for the 50 years that he has, and you can take the Bible and it is a reality to life. In fact, that night, he sat down with us. He asked us all to gather around the table and went to 2 Corinthians and read an entire chapter and led us in prayer about the whole circumstance. So there is something that can be rock stable in our lives, but it doesn't come about with psychology. Now, even some of the things I say here today will have some, you know, it'll seem a little psychological because, you know, a psychologist who is a non-Christian conducting a seminar in stress would say certain things. But truth is God's truth. It does not belong to psychologists. It belongs to God. And if it's true, they can discover it and say it as well as anybody can. So we don't want to become disturbed because we hear truth from a non-Christian source. Let's just be sure we discern what is true and what is simply psychological. I think one of the more discouraging things about stress, and I've noted it here in your notes, it says we see others who live stress-filled lives and it rolls off their backs like rain off a duck. And you encounter one-fourth of the stress and collapse. And it doesn't seem fair, but I want to note, they may not escape. And secondly, note that people have differing capacities for stress. And people have a differing response to different kinds of stress. Just leave a husband home with four kids sometimes, and you wonder how your wife ever survives one day, or did survive. Whereas you go into some of your husband's work environment, and you can't figure out how they can possibly get along in the middle of all that conflict that's going on. So let's go into this for just a moment, and I'll come back to Philippians 4 and try to tie some things together scripturally relating to our response to stress. Vance Havner once wrote, and it was recorded in the Daily Bread, it said, "If Christians do not come apart and rest a while, they may just plain come apart." And I think that is really, really true. I'd like to share with you what I think some of the major causes of stress are. Oh, by the way, this, I think, is a very, very good expression of how some of us feel. It's a snake, nose and tail on different tree limbs. I think I've overextended myself. And that really, that's the way I feel sometime, about ready to drop off. Well, let's talk for just a moment now on what the major causes of stress. Now, these are not the only ones, but from just the thinking I've done, I believe they're some of the very major ones. The first one is the issue of conflict. Most of us, when we're in conflict of any kind, encounter stress. And I really believe that we need to learn how to deal with it. Ted Engstrom once wrote that a mark of maturity is the ability to handle conflict. He says this includes the ability to deal with realities as what can and cannot be changed. For instance, there are certain issues in your marriage which probably can't fully be changed. Because we are a certain personality, we have a certain background. Some of us work in certain kinds of jobs that create certain kinds of stresses on us. My job for the last 11 years has caused me to travel a good bit. Well, in traveling about 40% of the time puts certain stresses in our family. So we have to either learn how to deal with it or I have to change jobs. And both are options. Both are options. Now, conflict comes about through a lot of things. I believe one of the major issues of conflict in a marriage is finances and money. Another has to do with children. And I believe that people in general generate conflict. Excuse me. So conflict puts stress in our lives. Now, I don't know any of you women particularly who like to live with conflict. Most women, when they are engaged in conflict, cannot think about anything else. Most men ignore it and get ulcers and heart attacks. I mean, it's there, but most men learn to deal with it and be in conflict on a regular basis. I'd say there virtually is hardly a time in my life when there's not some ongoing kind of conflict. It's a result just of working with people. And you're in the process of working through it. The second major area that I believe causes a lot of stress is blocked goals. Now, I believe Larry Crabb in his seminars on biblical counseling in his books has really shared this well. Most of us encounter stress when we have a goal that cannot be reached. For instance, I want my wife to act in a certain way. Well, see, I'm not in control of how she acts, or she wants me to act in a certain way. She is not in control of how I act. Or we want people to respond in a certain way. There are goals over which we have no control. So what often happens when we get angry, when we get stressful, is we're headed in a direction. Somebody or something does something to block that goal, and we start becoming stress-filled and angry. And I think Crabb makes a good distinction between desires and goals. He said you ought to have only goals that you know that you can reach. A goal to have a quiet time daily with God is one over which you have control. If it's frustrated, it's only you. But the others ought to be put in the category of desires. And we need to recognize that we cannot have goals that other people can easily block. We can have desires and prayer requests and prayer directions, but only God can work them out. A third issue is children. Any of you who have children will find yourself under stress. I talk to young couples who have kids in diapers, and they are just absolutely wiped out. And I said, well, just wait till they get to be teenagers, and you'll wish that the only problem was diapers and lack of sleep. And for us, we've gone through a lot of things at various points, and our youngest is still a teenager. We're going through our last teenager now. And then those of you who have kids who are married, who may have gone through marital problems, you say, just wait until later on. It seems that children are a never-ending circumstance of our lives, a great blessing, but also an incredible responsibility. The other thing that causes a lot of people stress is fear. Fear comes in. It's fear of the future, or it's fear of finances. It's fear of tragedy. It's a fear that when I'm traveling, which Mary does not have, by the way, but if she were afraid of what's going to happen on an airplane, what's going to happen there. It's a fear when our kids as teenagers go out and take the car and you get a call at 11 at night. And as soon as that phone rings, you know something has happened. And it's a great relief when you pick it up and it isn't. But there's fear of things in the future or things that may happen. Most of what we worry about never comes to pass. Someone said 95% of what we worry about never happens. But it's that other 5% that really gets to you, that really does happen. And, of course, we encounter some scriptural things on this. Now, one other item that I think is worth mentioning is change. Any kind of change in our lives causes incredible stress to us. A move, your body starts to break down. Something that really is a sign of age to you. You cannot do what you once were able to do. Particularly for a person who's been healthy for most of their lives, having some kind of physical disability is it's a tremendously depressing thing. And you do ask, like Bruce mentioned this morning, what have I done wrong, God? And so any kind of change creates problems, whether it's death of a loved one, a new job, a new boss, a new child, or a new son-in-law, or a new daughter-in-law, or whatever it is going to create some stress in our lives. I would like to add the final one, and you may be out of numbers there. I may not have added number 6. The issue of sin and disobedience. Psalm 38:18 is a verse that I think would be worth jotting down. Psalm 38:18. David says, "For I confess my iniquity, I am full of anxiety because of my sin." I am full of anxiety because of my sin. Guilt is a very great thing, and it's something we ought not to disparage, because when we sin, we ought to feel guilty. We ought to know that we've disobeyed God. God forbid that we should ever be in a situation where we have a seared conscience, where when we sin, we don't know it, and we don't care. But see, sin, when you are knowingly being disobedient to God, God is very faithful, I believe, to bring stressful things into your lives. Now, I've just tried to categorize the major causes of stress, and there are a bunch of others, whole bunch of others, and I thought it might be good if you'd like to just share a few of the things that bring stress into your lives. What are some things that you have found that bring stress into your own personal life? This is a workshop, not a message, so I'd like to get some feedback and some time for questions during this time. Rupture disc will do it. And you've probably not had one before, right? And you've been pretty healthy, haven't you, George? And I remember you wrote me a letter when you're flat on your back, and there's something helpless about that. Brings stress in. Yeah. What are some other things that cause stress for you? Yeah. Right. So you just things that are unfinished, turmoil. Similar to a move. One time we had a fire that destroyed everything we owned, and that created a little bit of stress. Wedding pictures, the whole business, you know, and we were just getting started. Everything in our home is circa 1962, which is the date of the fire that destroyed everything we owned. Yeah, things like that can be. Some of you, how about time pressure? Just having too much to do, especially in this rather hectic society that we live in. What else? What are some other things? Yeah, Bob?
We moved up here recently, and I had to leave one car back there until a month after we've been here. So we're on one car, and the one we brought did not adjust to the altitude well. And the stress seemed to be that we were dependent in areas we weren't accustomed to, because we had two cars, and if one went to boot, the other one.
Right. Yeah, just, and there are little things that come up. They just pop up here and there and there and there. It seems just when we don't need the plumbing to go bad, it does. Just when we don't need a problem from one of our children, it happens. God's timing and schedule is perfect in every incident of life. And He knows our limits. I like what Dr. Marvin said. He says, "Stress is an integral part of life. We set our whole pattern of life by our stress endpoint. If we hit it exactly, we live dynamic, useful, productive lives. But if we go over it, we break. And if we stay too far under, we vegetate." It's really incredible, the balance, that we need stress. Have you ever had a broken arm or a broken leg? And that thing stays in that cast? And then you've got to start exercising it, putting under stress for a period of time in order to make it function again. Now, I believe that God brings stress into our lives for a very definite purpose. So let's talk about, though, what stress evokes in us on the short term. Now, this is stress, good or bad. What does it do for us in the short term? And I think it's fairly simple, and I think all of us can identify with it. One of the first effects of stress that we noticed is anger. Do you get short when you're under stress? You sort of snap at your wife or your husband? And by the way, some of you don't, but become angry inward. Proverbs 15, 1 and 2 says, a soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. Being the authority figure in a home and relating to your children, surprising how a harsh word can really cause incredible problems. Much of yesterday I was reflecting on a conversation that I had with my daughter. I can't remember whether it was yesterday morning or the previous night, but it was a pretty stiff conversation, and I'm not staying on the Glen, and I went home last night, and the minute I walked in the house, I said, Dad, can you help me? She had a headache, and I have magic fingers. I can take away almost any headache, and so she knows that. And so I climbed into bed, you know, and got her there and said, well, what did you want to talk to? You told me on the phone yesterday that you wanted to talk to me about some other things. So I'm there rubbing her head, you know, getting rid of this headache. And so we talked for about 10 minutes last night. And I think I said, hon, I really don't want to be hard on you or harsh. And I'm struggling with what my responsibility is as a father in this issue that we were talking about. And then we prayed about it, and it's not resolved. She's 14, and, you know, she's coming into womanhood and making choices. And I'm struggling with what choices I ought to help her make. In fact, what ones I ought to make her make. But the issue of anger is there. And someone once said, I have no idea who said this, but temper is what gets most of us into trouble. And pride is what keeps us there. Temper is what gets most of us into trouble, and pride is what keeps us there. Boy, the tongue is a powerful thing. James 1:19. I wish there were times that I could restrain my tongue in anger. And frankly, I don't get angry very much. But even when I'm not angry, I can say some very sharp things. And if you are in a position of leadership in your company, in your home, or like I am in the Navigators, we don't have the freedom to just lash out with any little thing that comes flitting through our mind. You know, someone said, you know, you've said something you haven't thought up yet. You know, your tongue just pours it out. Or another little saying was, some people, when they open their mouth, all they do is change feet. You know, there are things like that. And I wish sometimes I could take back what I've said in anger. The second issue that I think happens is a critical spirit begins to develop in our lives. Now, this is still short term. Now, someone asked once, what is the difference between a critical spirit and just criticism? Most of you are probably involved in churches. And if your church is like mine, it's got plenty of things to criticize. You know, you've got the pastor, and you've got the people, and you've got the program, and you've got the sermon, and you've got the young people's program, and you just go down the list. And I deal with criticism a lot, because in the Navigators, our staff have very free options to criticize. I had a session last week with a guy who had written a very strong letter at one of our staff, and so I got the people who could do something about it together, and he shared it directly with them. And I got a letter yesterday. I have it in my briefcase right here. And the guy said, you know, it's amazing to me that we have an organization where someone can say what was said, and I think he was implying and still be employed. And it is amazing. But when does the real criticism bend over into critical spirit? This is a little off the topic of stress, but let me give you an idea. Just criticism is shared, and the result is left to God. But a critical spirit will not rest until the matter is resolved as that person wants it to be resolved. Have you ever had someone tell you, say, you didn't listen to me? You didn't understand what I said? And you really did. The thing was, is you didn't do what they asked. Now, when we share something with someone, there's a big difference in sharing it and leaving the result to God, particularly in the spiritual arena. We have one staff member who is a godly man, Warren Myers. Warren, just about every time he's come back to the States, he's got a few things he's been praying about. And for a few years, I was chairman of the U.S. Finance Committee, and we were trying to figure out how to adjust our salaries and things to meet certain of the legal requirements. You know, what is tax exempt and what isn't. And it was just a very complex thing. And Warren had some particular convictions on it. And he came and he just shared it with me. And there were very strong feelings, pretty deep ones on the way a Christian organization ought to function financially. But you know, Warren's never spoken to me about it since. And we did not do what he asked. Now that to me, he just is an example that he came and just shared it. Says, here's what I've been praying and thinking about, and I just want to share it with you. Then you do whatever you want with it. And so Warren goes back to Singapore and starts praying some more. Now that is a lot more effective than talking to me, I'll tell you. The other effect, I believe, is anxiety, and we've talked about that. Worry. That we just, on the short term, it just starts in getting worry going into our lives. And you might jot down Proverbs 12:25. And the last thing on the short term that I'm going to mention right at the moment is just tears. We start weeping. Especially, I believe, that happens to women. But there are other physical effects. We start getting headaches and tension things. I don't know anybody who hasn't had a stomach ache out of stress. Who hasn't had what you thought was the beginning of an ulcer just because of stress that's in your life. I think all of us have experienced that. But I'd like to go on for just a moment to some long-term effects of stress. And by the way, I've given you some references in the back of your handout there on that you can follow through, some secular ones and some Christian ones on stress, things that have been helpful to me. But let me just mention some long-term effects of stress. First of all, there are physical things that happen to you. Very clearly, we start having some physical problems that are a direct result of stress. I have here, if I can find it, an article from the Reader's Digest called, it's January 82, it's called Breakdown, A Journey Through Stress. Did any of you see that? And I just like to read a couple of comments from this, totally secular. Says, this person is saying, over the next months I learned a lot about stress. Whenever we're confronted with any unusual demand or challenge, real or imagined, from within us or without, an alarm goes off in our brain. Instantly, life-saving functions speed up. Adrenaline, clotting factors and fuel, sugars and fats flood the bloodstream, and the heart works harder to speed their delivery to vital organs and muscles. Metabolism and respiration speed up to meet the emergencies. So everything reacts. Hair follicle, how do you pronounce that? F-O-L-L-I-C-L-E? Follicle. Okay, hair follicle muscles, skin, gut, glands, liver, the pupils of our eyes, our eardrums. So we even get off an odor. If it's fear, the wolves will know it. And I think we've known that an animal can tell when a person is afraid. And she goes on and shares a number of things here, but then later she started doing some things to help herself nutritionally and so forth, but she finally said this, stress had undone me entirely. Now I had to put my scattered pieces back together. Stred had established conditions in which sickness could happen. Now, I was establishing conditions in which health could happen. And then went on to share some other things about what this person did, totally on a physical basis. But there's no question in my mind that stress runs us down in some way or another. In 1965, I came home one afternoon when I was teaching at the Air Force Academy. I just happened to appear in the house at an unexpected time, and I found Mary in bed weeping. And I've asked her permission before to share this particular thing. Well, I said, what is wrong? Well, she didn't know what was wrong. What's more, this had been going on for a month or two. She couldn't get up and down the stairs. She couldn't do the housework. She was emotionally down. She couldn't read the Bible. And she was encountering guilt that was just incredible. So, you know, obviously what you do is you get a doctor quick. Well, they couldn't find anything. They did this test and that test, and then they finally found out that her mother died of some rare disease, which we really don't even know what it was to this day. And we had a specialist out at the Air Force Academy Hospital just kind of wringing his hands, you know, thinking, testing her for this sort of thing. All the while, we didn't know what was going on. Well, finally, after almost 2 to 3 months of trying to figure this out, they ran another blood test and found out it was just mononucleosis. But simply didn't diagnose it because of her age. She was in her 30s, and you're not supposed to have it then. Well, the answer is simple. You just rest, and you wait. And it's quite a process. Well, we had to close down the ministry in our house. We had to do all kinds of things. However, as Mary and I have reflected on that, we believe we know what caused it. We moved to the Air Force Academy in 64. In May of that year, she'd had a baby, our third child. In June, she typed my thesis. In August, we made a major move out here and immediately launched into a ministry with cadets. Another month later, we moved from another house, and our place was just one level of turmoil. I mean, just people going through it all the time, like it's kind of all the time in our house. But the fact is, she had just totally run out of resources, weakened her system, and this came in. And then, normally, you know, the way you do this sort of thing, we moved again. And that was when we went back to Purdue and met the Romines here and others, and we could not have a ministry in our house, actually in our home then, for a period of almost a total year, and so we had to work around this, but we kept going, and she kept going, and she built her strength up, and God really raised her up. But the fact is, we feel that it was the kind of stressful environment we had purposely put ourselves through without counting the cost, and we paid the price. The other thing that can happen is emotional things can go wrong with you. I think all of us have seen the effect of stress in our lives in the way of emotional discouragement and depression. If I have 5 minutes of depression, that's a long time. But in 1977, I ran into a circumstance where I had worn myself out physically in the ministry. Some things had gone on where I was in the midst of a great deal of leadership, having to make leadership decisions, and had a whole additional region of the Navigators added to my plate. And every trip I went on, I'd rather have put the covers back over my head and stayed home because I didn't know what was going to happen on that trip. And wore myself really out, and I knew it. I was really getting low, and I was physically exhausted. I was emotionally exhausted. And we came to May, and we were in a leadership meeting here, a regional director's meeting, and we were facing some problems in the NAVs. One of our regional directors in another part of the United States resigned. Well, I had gotten a reputation as one who could go in and take a troubled area and bring some peace to it. I was somewhat of a peacemaker. And immediately the conversation started moving. Well, Jerry's lived in Colorado Springs for 4 or 5 years now. He's ready to move. He ought to go do this. And I just, my mind just said, no. And I reacted, and I was upset, and there was no way that I was going to do that. And then my friends got angry with me, because I'm usually calm and collected, and I don't express my emotions very strongly. And they were just upset with me. So, well, you don't want to move. And I left that meeting and went into a period of a month of depression, which is like an eternity for me. Because I felt I had failed. I felt I was unavailable. I examined my heart for sin. I had no idea whether it was pruning or chastisement. And what's more, I didn't care, you know, along those lines. I was just plain down. And it was as close to something that really affected me emotionally deeply. And what's interesting that happened, after I got to reexamining my life through that process, and we took some time off. Jack Mayhall was my boss at that point, and he just commanded me to take a vacation. And we went down to New Mexico, and I reexamined my entire lifestyle. I changed several things, which I could list for you what I did. And we recovered, and, you know, it was a minor thing in some ways, but it was very major to me. And my friends told me that since that time, I've stopped being as harsh. I've been easier on people. I've been less goal-oriented. I've been willing to, and just a whole bunch of things happened. It's kind of like you took a hard piece of meat, and you get that little meat cleaver, you know, that thing with the little wedges on the end, and what is that, swissing it? I don't know what it is, but you know, what do you do it?
Tenderize it.
Well, that's what was happening. Plomp, blomp, 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 you know, just like that. And I came out, and something happened deeply in my life because of that. And I look at Psalm 102. You might want to jot that one down. But if you don't believe that there are some emotional loads that David felt, he said this in verse 3, "For my days have been consumed in smoke. My bones have been scorched like a hearth. My heart has been smitten like grass and has withered away. Indeed, I forget to eat my bread. Because of the loudness of my groaning, my bones cling to my flesh. I resemble a pelican of the wilderness. I become like an owl of the waste places. I lie awake. I have become like a lonely bird on a housetop." Now that is a picture of a person in depression. He can't eat, he can't sleep, and he's physically low, and no one can understand what's happening. But there are many other aspects of emotional lows. And what's more, probably when you hit some of these stress-filled emotional times and physical things, your life will never be the same. I mean, you don't go back to where you once were, either physically or emotionally. You always have a little tender spot in those things. You know, once you strained your back, you guard it for the rest of your life. Once you have really had something happen to you emotionally, there's always that little tender spot that you think about it. And that's God bringing an incredible memory into your life. And the way you go through it determines whether you grow or you become bitter. You usually come out weaker in one sense, but stronger in another. The other thing that normally happens for most people under long-term effects of stress is their spiritual life, on the short term particularly, starts to take a dip. When you're under stress, you usually cancel your quiet time, your motivation goes low, and your guilt goes up. But you know something? I'd like to encourage you. There are some tremendous things that stress does for you. At least it has done for me personally. And I'm just trying to be very honest with you as to, you know, what's happened to me, what's happened to Mary, what's going on. And share with you just some things we've learned. And then you have to take them and apply them to yourself. One of the things does, it drives us to the end of ourselves. Before I went through that time in 1977, my friends would tell me that I can do anything. I've got a large capacity. And you know, I started to believe him. I started to really believe I didn't have any limits, I think. I thought I could beat my body to the end. I could live night and day and get very little sleep. I thought I could handle most any conflict that came up. And God just had to show me. He said, listen, I've got news for you that you have some limits. And you're going to have to learn to live within them. And what's more, I've got news for you. You've got a little pride that's got to be tackled in the process. And what's more, I'm going to display it publicly. And everybody's going to know it. Because you can't hide it. See, that brings you to the end of yourself. And then what it does, if your walk with God is right, I believe it will drive us to God. It'll cause us to cry out in desperation to God. Like in the beginning of Psalm 102, it says, hear my prayer, O Lord, and let my cry for help come to thee. Do not hide thy face from me in the day of my distress. Incline thine ear to me in the day when I call. Answer me quickly. Have you ever prayed that? Have you ever been in a circumstance where you said, God, not only do I want an answer, but I need it now, right away. Now, God may or may not bring it to you right away, but that was the sense of urgency that comes into our lives. Well, that's enough of all those discouraging things. Let's try to get on to some of the circumstances of what you can actually do about it. And I'll just share a few ideas. Now, I believe we have lunch is at 12:30, right? Okay, so I'm planning to take till about 12:20, if that's all right. And then I think I've got about 10 more minutes of sharing. And then we can go back and forth on some questions and some interaction and some things that you've learned. I'd like you to remember one thing, and that is that stress and the cost of stress is cumulative. It's a little bit like cholesterol. It builds up in the system. And that's why, for myself as a person who seemed to take almost any kinds of stress and keep going, that finally it caught up. And I think that's the way it is with a lot of us, that stress finally catches up with us. We cannot continue to spend what we do not have and expect to survive. I got that from George Fouché in his finance seminar. Right, George? You can't spend what you don't have and expect to survive. Eventually, it's going to get to you. And so we need to recognize that it's cumulative. Okay, so what can we do? Well, here are some thoughts for you. I think one of the first issues that we have in the area of our prescription, I use a little term there, Rx, which I think means prescription. Some of you doctors or whatever nurses can tell me if that's right. But the first thing that I think we need to do is consider our view of God. Now let's turn back to Philippians for just a moment. Go back to Philippians 4. Paul said in Philippians 4, 11, 12, and 13, he says, not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need. Now, what's that next verse? Just say it. I can do all things through Christ which strengthens me. Now, I think we get to treat that a little bit like a saying, I can do all things through Christ which strengthens me. It's fun to say to people, you know, well, you can do anything through Christ who strengthens you. But there's a prerequisite. The prerequisite is that you learn to accept every circumstance as from God. And so our view of God, that God is sovereign, He is loving, and He is the one who, even if it is a result of sin in your life, has sovereignly brought this circumstance to bear at this time. See, that's what Paul said. I've learned the secret, being filled, going hungry. He says, I've learned to be content in whatever circumstance I am. Then he says, knowing that and having made that decision, then I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But unless we've learned that, I don't think that's a verse you can claim. Unless our view of God is that He has done it. In John 16:33, He says, in the world you will have what? Tribulation. Now the word tribulation, as I understand it, is pressure. It is not persecution. If I understand that Greek word, it's one where they throw the grapes into the wine press and they stomp on it. And it squeezes out the juices. The grapes are under tribulation. And so our lives come under pressure. The second issue that I think we need to realize is just to learn something about ourselves. To have a sane view of ourselves. First of all, to realize that we have certain abilities and we don't have others. A second thing is to realize that each of us have differing capacities for differing kinds of stress. I have a high capacity. And Mary, for years, was intimidated by that. I would schedule far more than she could ever stand. And she began to feel guilty about it. Until finally one day, she says, I finally realized that I, Mary, was not abnormal. It was Jerry who was abnormal. And once she recognized that, she started living in a favorite little saying these days. She said, well, I'm just not into that at this point in my life. And she's recognized certain things that put her under incredible pressure. And she said, well, I am just simply not going to put myself in that particular circumstance unless absolutely necessary. When I have a choice, and it frustrates me to no end sometimes, And I just said, yes, I know you're not into this thing at this time in your life and so forth. And so we've learned some things about ourselves and where we relate. But she has learned some self-perception as to what her capacity is and what she needs to do. All of us need to recognize that we have limitations. Some of it's caused by age, and we're just changing. You don't have all the physical stamina that you once had. I believe you generally have more emotional stamina. I believe the third issue has to do with changing our responses to stress. Now, I believe on a previous page, somewhere back there, I said the problem of stress is not the stress, but it's our response to it. That is, something happens, we make a choice of how we're going to think about that something that happens. I can remember a month ago as I got broadsided, my daughter was right there by me, and it just scared me something terrible. And it was my fault, incidentally. You know, it wasn't just, I couldn't be angry at anybody. And I remember getting out of the car, and I said, now, the Lord, this wedding's a week away, and I was in a hurry. I said, why'd this happen? But then I said, now, I can't do that. I said, I've got to thank God. So I thanked God for the situation. And then the people who hit us, they were an older couple, turned out to be Christians. And I remember before the policeman came and all this, we got in there and we prayed together. Kind of an interesting situation. And just the fact that I made a decision not to get angry at myself, for one thing, about it. So see, my response to it, I still felt terrible about it. Especially we were having a big conference here, and I came with this big welt on my forehead. The next day I wore dark glasses part of the time, but it didn't help a bit. Everybody said, what happened? Well, and you got to go through all this story about what happened, you know, and you're embarrassed about it. But the response to stress, for instance, I believe that by an act of your will that you can decide to think in a certain way about certain things. You can change your response. Look at Philippians 4, verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, let your mind dwell on these things. Now, there is a choice that is made. It doesn't say that God has got to do it. It says you allow your mind, you make your mind dwell on those things. Now, that's not just a once-for-all solution. You say, well, have you ever tried that? Yes, I've tried it. Does it work all the time? No. I mean, it's hard. It isn't easy to just make a decision to think in a certain way. For instance, there are people that I meet who when something, especially in a conflict, happens, or they always read every circumstance as someone's out to get them, or they read a motive into someone else's actions. Well, so-and-so said this, but I know what they really meant. You know, they didn't call me yesterday, and I know why. Or I wasn't invited to so-and-so, and I know why. I've had it. Happened to me. I know it happens. Whereas on the other hand, they can say, gee, they didn't call me yesterday. I wonder if they've got a problem. Maybe I ought to check, see if there's something to pray about. Or you can think so many different ways about an event and about the way people act and respond to you. I remember, I just lost where the story was. I'll tell it, but I can't put the name with it right at the moment. There was a couple that was in an environment, and it was one of the astronauts' wives. And they were in a social event, and all the wives came away just said, did you see this snooty woman? Boy, she didn't say anything. Do you know she didn't even speak to me? Well, the woman had a severe stuttering problem. And just was very difficult for her to be in public. In fact, refused television interviews. But everybody misinterpreted why she didn't communicate to them and talk with them, because she couldn't. And I do know whose wife it was, but I think I'll hold that. Okay, the other thing is that I think each of us have certain things that are stress stimulants. There are certain things that come into our lives that we ought not to do. Someone has said that a drunk doesn't go into a bar to have a Coke. We just don't put ourselves in certain environments. We have a daughter whose system is particularly sensitive to certain substances in foods. And she has learned over the years, when she finds herself starting getting uptight and all of this sort of thing, she knows what foods to bring herself off of now, because she's an adult now. And I think all of us recognize there are certain kinds of circumstances that just stimulate stress. Well, when we have a choice, I think we can avoid getting into those. Making a choice to do other things or to avoid it. Now, when God sovereignly brings you into it, that's a whole other area. I believe another thing that's very important to us is that we have redemptive relationships, friendships that are deep and where we are able to share. And I believe these are friendships outside the context of our marriage. There are some people that we just need to share what is happening in our lives with someone else. And I believe that can only be done in the context of what I call a redemptive relationship. That is one that buys back rather than a blood-sucking relationship where you feel like you're being drained all the time. And I believe men need other men and women need other women in that regard. Then I have a thing that I call the big three. And this is extremely important in terms of recovery from stressful situations. The first is the simple issue of rest. Psalm 127:2 says it's vain for you to rise up early, to retire late, and to eat the bread of painful sorrow. So he gives to his beloved, and in the New American Standard it says even in his sleep. I know other translations don't say it quite like that. He gives to his beloved even in his sleep. We had an interesting experience that happened about 3 years ago. We were having a staff conference, and Elvin, I don't remember whether you were there or not, when J. Oswald Sanders spoke to us. Were you there? And he made a comment. Mr. Sanders is 82 years old now. I got his letter the other day. He spoke 360 times last year. Traveling conference to conference. I mean, he's amazing. He's an interesting guy. He told us when he was in his 50s, he was a physical wreck. He says when he was about 48, he couldn't lay one knee on top of the other because of arthritis and problems physically. But anyhow, he was trying to share with us some needs, and he shared a fact on rest that made the women breathe a sigh of relief and made the men drop their jaws in unbelief. And he simply said this, that his experience has been that on the average, women need an hour a day more rest than men. It's kind of interesting. And he went on to explain that just a little bit. But Mary and I, and we have talked about it, and I believe it's in general true. Women generally need more rest than men. Now, there are unusual situations, but that was something he shared. I am not a short night person. I need 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night. I used to get by on a lot less. And I find that I can get by in about 6 hours a night if all I'm dealing with is things, but you start putting me with people, and it's a whole different ballgame as far as I'm concerned. The second aspect of the big three is recreation. We need something that it has relaxation and exercise. Now, I define recreation very simply. I define it as doing what you choose to do and are not required to do. That is relaxing. Some people have watched me relax and they said, that would never relax me. I said, well, of course not. It's what relaxes me. I enjoy writing. And so, but it's not part of my job. But I do it for relaxation. It doesn't relax my wife at all. It makes her uptight. But it relaxes me. It's an expression of something. I enjoy playing handball and others don't like it all. I don't like to run, etc. You know, I've got things. I know pretty well what relaxes me. And incidentally, about 7 years ago, I made some fairly severe changes in what I read and what I did with some of my leisure time. And for instance, now I have gotten into a pattern here where I simply do not take certain things home at night. Number one, I don't get them done if I take them home because I've got other responsibilities at home. I tell Lauren, all Lauren's kids are gone. He'll come in the morning, have him waken at 4 o'clock, and I have a dozen bright ideas. And I said, listen, this is unfair. He said, I've got my kids at home, and I've got all this, and you go home and you think. And, you know, you wake up in the middle of the night with all these wonderful ideas and so forth. And if any of you know Lauren, he does that. I mean, this little business at 2 o'clock in the night is not at all unusual for him. And it would be for me. But the fact is we need to be able to relax, and many people never learn. And the last thing is the issue of balance and pacing. Easily said, very difficult to do, both on eating, working, time with the family. Believe me, until you're too old to learn the lessons, we usually don't do what we need to do. I'd like to just mention having a little bit of a plan. I believe there needs to be a plan where we need a way out to reduce some stress points. That is, there may be particular areas now that you can choose to reduce. The second thing is to learn to respond differently. And finally, to retrain our thinking instead of being angry with the stressful things, to accept them as from God. You know, Elvin's just come out of an operation, I know, and I bet if I knew each of you well enough, I'd know some things that have gone on with you. Well, it's under God's sovereign hand. And we need to rethink some of these things. Now, I've just written down a few things which I don't need to go through just on this conclusion. I've found out that not only do we need a plan, we need to see an end in sight. There needs to be hope that the stress is not forever. And I mentioned Psalm 42, and you can study that yourself, and I've included a little study on stress that you might want to do privately sometime. And I've put some fun little tests, and don't pay too much attention to them. They're just kind of fun to do. there in the back. And if you want to do them instead of listening to one of the messages, fine. But can they do it during your message, Cliff? Yeah, that's all right. Okay. Yeah, right. But they're just give you some ideas about stress. And I made some comments there at the last that stress is real, our responses are real, and we can't deny its effect, but it's both controllable and bearable. It's controllable by our decisions, and it's bearable through our roots in God. God will never bring us into any circumstance that we cannot bear. And each one of us has a different capacity.